T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Fluence Forum, presented by AARP of Minnesota, Corn Growers of Minnesota, and by Minnesota's credit unions. Now here's your host, News Talk 830 WCCO political insider, Blois Olson.
Hello and welcome to the Fluence Forum. I'm Blois Olson. This is another in our series of battleground races in Minnesota. This is the second congressional district that we're going to talk about this hour. And joining me first is Representative Angie Craig. Later in the hour, you'll hear from her challenger, Tyler Kistner, on this race that has had some turns in the road and some interesting dynamics, but we'll drill down on some issues as we have with other candidates during this time. Representative Craig, thanks for joining me today.
Blois, thank you so much for having me, and thanks to WCCO for making this possible.
So, you know, obviously COVID is on everybody's mind. It's changed the world for so many people. It's changed our lifestyles. As you've been in Congress during this time, what has been your biggest observation about either what you're hearing from people on what they, you know, need during these times, or what you think you should, you know, Congress should be doing as priorities during this time?
Well, you know, COVID-19 has really put the work into full focus for me because, you know, I spent more than 2 decades working at 2 healthcare manufacturing companies. So, you know, our food supply chain, our healthcare supply chain have been big concerns. And then just, you know, our in my mind, the lack of sufficient response that the administration has had in dealing with COVID-19. I have the privilege, too, of serving on the House Committee on Small Business, Blois. So, you know, at this point, we've helped over 500 businesses on the official side get help, get access to the Paycheck Protection Program. I helped design that program, and it was actually a bill of mine that the president signed into law that extended that program into August. So, you know, it's really just been head down, help as many of our constituents and as many of our small businesses as we possibly can during these incredibly difficult times.
So talk about small business and the economy. Obviously, you represent a very diverse district, from agriculture to small business to some major employers. As you look forward to what Congress may have to do going forward, are there priorities that you've set? Because at some point, there comes some sort of limit on, you know, trying to save everything and everyone from either the economy or from the pandemic impacts.
Well, I have been laser focused, Blois, on helping our Main Street businesses. I've got the privilege of, as you said, representing this very diverse district of Mississippi River towns and Minnesota River towns, and to me, it's always been the most important that we keep the economic engine of this country running until we get to a vaccine. And so, again, the Paycheck Protection Program is something that I've been particularly focused on. I have filed a bill that would allow the hardest hit businesses to get a second round of PPP, those with revenue that has been impacted by 50% or greater, as well as I'm very concerned about our independent restaurants throughout the country, throughout Minnesota, throughout this district. You know, places like Wildcats and Egan and Plate in Prior Lake and, you know, Spiral Brewery over in Hastings. If we can help these small businesses survive through the pandemic, then, you know, we'll have an economy to stand back up. But if we let these small businesses fail, I think we're going to end up in a depression instead of an economic recession across this country. And, you know, the last thing I'll end with is I absolutely believe there should be a second round of economic stimulus checks. I think we need more assistance to state and local governments for some of the lost revenue. You know, we literally have teachers and first responders who are starting to be laid off, furloughed in our country. And we just need to give these cities and towns a little bit of help until we get to a vaccine.
Talking about that, one of the reasons why, you know, there hasn't been another round is just differences between the Democrats in the House and Republicans in the Senate. You talked about, you know, trying to be more bipartisan once you were elected, things like that. What are your rays of hope on bipartisanship, and where does Washington still need some major fixes on polarization?
Well, the truth is that, you know, neither party wants you to work together. And I have stood up to my own party when I've had to through the course of my first term. But, you know, 80% of the bills that I've written or co-sponsored, Blois, have been bipartisan. My bills have Democrats and Republicans on them. And I think we've got to get back to a point in this country where we work together more. I have developed a strong relationship with my colleague, Republican Pete Stauber, from up in the 8th Congressional District. He and I have worked closely together on special education funding for Minnesota and across the country. We have a couple of committees that we work together on, the Small Business Committee. We're both committed to broadband and high-speed internet across our nation. And we also serve together on the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure. And, you know, both believe strongly that we should be investing in the infrastructure of this nation. That's one of, you know, one of my biggest concerns is that, you know, we've been waiting for 4 years for the president, you know, to put forward the big T&I bill, transportation infrastructure bill that he promised, and we continue to wait. And, you know, Mitch McConnell has two COVID relief bills over in the Senate right now that the House passed over to him. Mitch McConnell hasn't put a single additional COVID relief bill to the Senate here at this point. And the truth is that, you know, Republicans, including my opponent, you know, they don't want to do the tough choices that are necessary. And right now, what the Minneapolis Fed and Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman, are telling us is that we have to be bold. If we want to prevent our economy from falling into a depression, if we want to get back to positive GDP growth quickly, we have got to be bold and we've got to continue to provide these relief packages.
Speaking of your opponent, you know, we had offered an opportunity to debate. Is there a reason why you didn't want to debate your opponent more this year?
So Tyler and I, as you may know, we agreed on three debates back in July. Our thinking, you know, we get a lot of requests, Blois, for debates is we'd pick three formats, one TV, one radio, and one that's really was small business focused, economy focused. You know, I do a town hall every single month, Blois. So we invite folks to come to the town hall, to stand up. It doesn't matter to me if you're a Republican or Democrat. I stand there and I answer questions until folks are done. So, you know, and I guess I'll just end my answer to you, Blois, with this. Tyler and I have done, I think, three times the debates that our presidential candidates are going to end up doing. So I think three debates in a congressional race during a pandemic is pretty good.
Got it. You talked a little bit about agriculture, the diversity of your district. Obviously, there's been a lot of changes for ag over the last few years. Are there key initiatives that you want to see in the future if you're reelected on ag that maybe weren't able to get done this Congress?
Well, you know, I'm so proud to be on the Ag Committee and to be the first Democrat in the 2nd District who's ever been endorsed by the Farm Bureau PAC. And I really think that speaks to the focus I've had fighting for family farmers since the very first day I was sworn into the U.S. Congress. You know, our district, if you just look at it on a map with cover crops, is probably over 60% full of cover crops. And so, you know, my own grandfather was a farm foreman who lost the farm in the 1980s farm crisis. And so, you know, my striving to be on this committee is really about, I spent two decades working in international business. I understand how important trade is to our family farmers, and the two businesses I work for, 60% of our sales came from outside the United States. I'm a pro-trade Democrat. I helped get USMCA, the Mexico-Canada trade agreement, across the finish line here in the Democratic caucus, a strong supporter. And, you know, on the energy front, I've been particularly critical. My opponent has refused to call out the administration for anything. In fact, he's said out loud he supports the president 99% of the time. I've supported the president when he's right on ag, like year-round sales of E15, but I've also called him out. Trade wars, no one ever wins a trade war. The trade war with China has been particularly devastating to, you know, our producers here in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, these small refinery, quote-unquote, oil waivers that the administrations continue to give out, the EPA, you know, it's been devastating to the renewable fuel standards. So, you know, it's something that I care deeply about, and I think COVID-19 in particular has really reinforced the risk we have in our food supply chain, and that's something in future Congresses that I'll continue to work on.
One of the things that you bring up is trade. Are there other, outside of agriculture, other things that we need to do on trade? You talked about international business. Obviously, we learned a lot about supply chains during COVID-19. What other key issues does the U.S. need to advance or change with regard to trade and our supply chains, and whether it's healthcare or other issues?
Well, we can't forget that when we talk about trade policy, we've got to remember that the goal of any trade deal should be, you know, to help us build the middle class, to create good paying jobs, and to strengthen every single one of our communities. You know, we've got to grow our ag trade. I've encouraged the administration, you know, to open up trade talks on ag with Europe. I've encouraged the administration to end the trade war while still taking on China for its intellectual property theft. We've got to get to phase two talks with China. We've got to hold China's feet to the fire here when it comes to meeting the targets they set under phase one. And I think we've got to get back, boys, to multilateral trade agreements. This, you know, America going it alone with, you know, a country, it's all well and good, but it's really the second choice. If we want to put pressure on China, we got to get back to putting together these multilateral trade agreements to make sure that, you know, we are shipping American goods all around the globe. You know, we're only 5% of the world's population. If we want to have American companies do well, we've got to have good trade agreements that hold nations to strong labor protections and strong environmental protections. And, you know, perhaps USMCA is a new model moving forward. We've got to make sure that those two countries comply, but it may indeed be a new model.
I want to pivot here because criminal justice reform has become a very talked about topic during the election year, and it's, you know, kind of ground zero here is in Minnesota. People in your party have all kinds of proposals on the table. Where do you come at this issue from?
Well, you know, let me start by being absolutely clear. And I've been clear. I've been consistent from the start. And I'm starting to get a little bit annoyed with my opponent because he continues to just not tell the truth about my position here. I 100% support efforts to address systemic racism in our society and reform our criminal justice system, but I do not support defunding the police. In fact, I've voted multiple times to increase funding to our local police departments during my first term in Congress. And the way I come at this, Blois, is when you just look at the facts, when you look at systemic racism in housing, you know, our history of redlining in this country and how that has left black and brown Americans really at a disadvantage from a wealth creation. When you look at the inequities that exist in healthcare in this country, when you look at the achievement gap for black Americans, we have to say that there's a problem here, and we need to face it as a nation together in a very open way. On the other hand, when I talk to my sheriffs, for example, you know, Tim Leslie in Dakota County or Luke Hennon in Scott County, you know, the first thing that they and my police chief say is, look, yeah, we need a better way to look at, you know, complaint records on officers, particularly as we're hiring out of state, right? They need to see that data. They need the additional flexibility to be able to fire officers who do not fit within the culture. And by the way, out here in our district, most of our police departments and sheriff's departments already ban chokeholds or, you know, any compression of a, you know, carotid artery. So, you know, a lot of the reforms that we're talking about in this country that were included in the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act, they've already been implemented out here in our district. And so I just think we have to understand it is not contradictory at all to say I support my local police department. I support our officers. They do, you know, have a very, very difficult job. We're asking a lot of them. We're asking them to be, you know, social workers too out there in the field. And as we think about addiction and mental health issues, and we have to address systemic racism in our nation.
One other topic that is always comes up during elections, and but it seems to be more timely this year because of the president attempting to change kind of the payroll tax. And as the government spends more, there may be more pressure on some of our safety net programs or our senior programs like Social Security and Medicare. Are there key things there that you think Congress should maybe start planning for? Or, you know, do we still have enough time to kind of wait and maybe deal with it down the road?
Well, this is actually a topic, Blois, where there's just a huge difference between myself and my opponent, Mr. Kistner. You know, he has actually said he'd like to privatize Social Security. I mean, the comments that he has made around this. And, you know, for me, I don't think we can go back to a time in our nation when our seniors, a third of our seniors, lived in poverty. And so, you know, right now, Americans pay Social Security tax on the first, you know, $138,000-ish of their earnings. And then if you make more than that, you completely stop paying into Social Security. You know, I'm not proposing that we make it a straight line on your earnings. Maybe you pick it back up and you start paying back in when as a couple you make $400,000 a year. But if we did just that, if we just said, okay, you know, if you've been lucky enough in this country, you've been fortunate enough to make more than $400,000 a year, maybe you should start paying back into Social Security. That alone would shore up the trust fund for decades and decades. And then you also mentioned Medicare. One of the bills that co-sponsored and passed the House this year would finally require the federal government to negotiate drug prices for Medicare and Medicaid recipients. So, you know, the idea that we actually prohibit under federal law the government, the largest buyer of health in our nation, from negotiating its pricing with drug companies, it's just fiscally irresponsible in our nation.
You're listening to Affluence Forum. We're talking about battleground races today. We're talking about the 2nd Congressional District race. Joining me now is Representative Angie Craig. As we kind of wrap up this interview, you'll hear next from her challenger, Tyler Kistner. Representative, you worked in healthcare. Healthcare seems to be one of the top issues that voters want to talk about and understand this year. Some in your party want to move to a single-payer system. There's Bernie Sanders, kind of Medicare for all. Where do you think we really need to work on healthcare related to either the federal government or what many people think in Minnesota was a pretty good system before the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I have been consistent that I think we should build on the Affordable Care Act. And in fact, that's exactly what I've been working toward in my first term in Congress. I've sponsored 100 bills or written 100 co-sponsored or written 100 bills on healthcare. I spent two decades working in a healthcare manufacturing business. I ran the health plan, a self-insured plan for a Fortune 500 company before I came to Congress. And sadly, Blois, I think this topic, you know, redoing healthcare in our nation is going to come faster than any of us understand at this point. On November 10th, the Supreme Court will hear the ACA case. And if the ACA is thrown out, what that's going to mean for the people of this district is that we're going to be back in a time when thousands of individuals and families couldn't access or afford health care. The ACA cut the uninsured in half in our nation. And if we think about, and I know what my opponent is going to say, even before you hear from him about he will protect pre-existing conditions. And the ACA is the law that does that. And he will likely point to a plan, quote unquote, that he says Republicans have put forth. It is an 18-word statement. That is not a healthcare plan. 18 words. That's it. And so, you know, I think we need to build and stabilize on the ACA. We need to add a public option. We need to let Medicare negotiate its drug pricing. We need to let the private insurance company negotiate some of the drug pricing. And I took a Republican idea from Minnesota, reinsurance, and, you know, it was my belief in this policy was really born from my time at St. Jude Medical running our health plan with a, you know, stop loss insurance in place. I took a Republican idea to Washington. I got it past the House, the Democratic controlled House of Representatives. And so, you know, I am willing to work with anybody who's got a good idea, and especially on health care. You mentioned Medicare for All. I do not support standing up the Medicare system. I actually believe we need to move away from a fee-for-service healthcare system in this country. And that proposal would not be moving away from a fee-for-service system. It needs to be outcomes-based, values-based. We need to reward prevention. We need to reward saving money for the healthcare system, and that it would not be that, the Medicare for All plan. So I don't support it.
Final question, final topic. One that I know you're familiar with is your race has had an interesting twist this year with the loss and tragedy of one of your opponents who had major party status. There was a state law. Your campaign was recently successful in keeping the election in November versus the state law, which would have pushed it to February. Just briefly, why did you think it was important to have the election in November?
Well, it's important that voters' voice is counted in the November general election, and that this district is represented in Washington next year. Federal law says very clearly that U.S. House races occur on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November in the November general election. And so we felt that, you know, if you push this to February, this district goes unrepresented for a period of time. I actually am not sure why Tyler is working so hard not to proceed with an election that is already underway. I think that voters in this district, they have the right to have their votes counted in the November election, and they have the right to have continuous representation in Congress.
Representative Angie Craig, thanks for joining us for him. Keep your energy strong and stay healthy these last few weeks.
Thank you, Blois. It's a real pleasure.
When we come back, Tyler Kistner will answer on the same topics here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Fluence Forum, presented by AARP of Minnesota, Corn Growers of Minnesota, and by Minnesota's credit unions. Now here's your host, News Talk 830 WCCO political insider, Blois Olson.
Welcome back to this Fluence Forum. One that we're focused on in the second congressional district. You just heard from Representative Angie Craig. Now joining me, Republican challenger Tyler Kistner. Tyler, thanks for joining me.
Blois, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having us.
First and foremost, congratulations. You have a newborn son in the middle of the final weeks of a campaign. And I know you're a Marine, so I know you can probably handle it, but that's a lot to take on in the last couple of weeks of the campaign. Make sure you take a few moments to soak that up.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's a adapt, overcome. But I mean, as I said earlier, there's no such thing as early or late. It's right on time. So no, he's a blessing. Mommy and the little baby boy are both doing great and healthy. And our little girl is continuing to help out with the family.
Sounds great. So let's just start there. Healthcare is obviously a topic that is near the top of many people's priority lists and issues, has been for a long time. You've just had healthcare experience with the birth of your son, but talk about any changes you think need to be made to the Affordable Care Act. Obviously, it's a hot topic with the Supreme Court coming up, but it's also, I know, something that people talk to every day while you're out campaigning.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at healthcare, I mean, it was a mess before Obamacare, but it just, you know, Obamacare helped make it worse and only just increased a lot of the issues that we're facing, where, I mean, premiums and deductibles for people paying private insurance just doubled. So it's one thing we need to always look, especially with this pandemic, always look to keep Americans safe and healthy. I mean, one thing that we're talking about here in the Republican Party is just investing in therapeutics and cures, but also slashing drug prices and helping end this surprise medical billing. So, I mean, the first steps you can take is open up transparency for people, make it a patient-centered type healthcare plan while still protecting pre-existing conditions and always expanding access to affordable healthcare, especially telemedicine for our rural communities and then the mental health services. And ensuring, just like we saw with COVID, modernizing our medical stockpile and preparing for any future pandemics. That should be at the forefront of everything, and bringing back manufacturing of a lot of these medical devices and pharmaceuticals back to this country, so we're not over-reliant on China and other overseas-type companies. But then just ensuring we are looking at ways that we can effectively cut the cost to make sure it's more affordable for the average American. You go out there, and I mean, the prices you're paying for premiums and deductibles is just insane to hear. And then, you know, it's one of those things. It's always should be the American people first, and finding ways to make sure it can benefit them for future prosperity and keeping this country safe.
You know, you bring up the pandemic and being ready for such a thing. You've been in the military. You obviously have studied and understand preparedness. Where do you think the country was in relation to preparedness, and what do we need to do coming out of the pandemic to, you know, kind of be ready for another one, or things that we need to change?
I mean, in the military, it was always after action reviews. So after everything, we always did a thorough review to find out where we went right, where we went wrong, and how to make sure we never make the same mistakes again. And so with this one, I mean, there's blame at all levels of government. But what we need to do is not just sit there and finger point and, you know, say blame. We need to be looking at how we can best make sure we're prepared for the next pandemic. And first and foremost, making sure we stop this over-reliance on China, hold them accountable, make sure we're bringing back a lot of the manufacturing for some of these devices and the pharmaceuticals, and really creating things here and getting those stockpiles. So in the event we ever have a pandemic again, we know exactly how to address it and be effective and very responsive. That's what people want to hear. You don't want to hear about the past blames. You want to hear about the future visions and how we can best move forward for keeping America healthy and safe, but also how we can continue to push towards greater prosperity. And I think bringing back jobs, bringing back a lot of the development and the creation, and helping cut down on those supply chain issues that we have in America, that is going to be the number one way we do this.
Finding balance in trade is a challenge, especially in the second district, where farmers really depend on foreign markets for products and for goods. And so is there an approach to trade that you've studied or you've seen, or ideas on trade that would be, if you're elected, would help the second district, but still, you know, maybe cut down on some of the over-reliance on Asia for some, you know, either medical devices or pharmaceuticals?
And it's not even just Asia. And yes, I worked a lot of this when I was in Marine Special Operations working overseas. You know, I worked in embassies with ambassadors and foreign dignitaries. And people don't never think, oh, you're in the military, you work trade deals. But you had to create a safe and stable, secure environment in order to have effective trade with a lot of those overseas partners. So I was in the very mix of it. And the effective way to do this is through bilateral or multilateral type trade deals, because what our farmers need, what our economy needs, is markets that have full and fair access that people can get their products into. What are farmers looking to do? They want to get their products into a market so that they can sell it and create a profit. They're a small business, and it goes up and down this district from the very north where you have the small businesses and the cities and suburbs to the very south where it's the rural farmers, yet it's all small business, and making sure that we have those foreign markets to get our products into, to continue to benefit from, to continue strengthening the American economy, the American people, so that we have a profit to reinvest in our businesses, creating jobs. You know, my opponent didn't even support the USMCA until it was brought to the table right after a year and a half's worth of investigations and impeachments. And it wasn't until, you know, Nancy Pelosi said it was okay to vote on that she finally started getting behind it. We need to ensure that we're creating more trade deals that benefit the American workers, the American businesses, and ultimately the American farmers.
As you've been campaigning, the economy has obviously hit people in different ways during the pandemic. There's a very diverse economy in the Second District. What are you hearing from the likes of farmers? What are you hearing from the likes of small business owners? And what are the key components that you'd want to advocate for to make sure that the economy recovers quickly after the pandemic?
Yeah, and I did a 100-mile run across the district. It was my wife's idea, and it was a good one because it got me to every corner of this district. I was down in Wabasha and Lake City. Even though Lake City had the construction on their main street, it was still made quite the detour. And then, I mean, I was over in Scott County from Prior Lake, Jordan, down to Belle Plaine and Minnesota's largest candy store. And then up in the north in South St. Paul, Invergrove Heights, and running on Roberts Street. And you talk to all these small businesses, you talk to the workers, and you talk to the constituents of this district, and everyone's saying the same thing. We need to combat the coronavirus effectively to make sure that we're protecting the vulnerable. But at the same time, we cannot forget about the small businesses. We need to get this economy back running. We need to get people back to work safely and effectively. And then at the same time, we also need to look for future prosperity and ensuring that we're always doing what we can to open up markets, to gain access, and then helping create that infrastructure to make sure people can really thrive so that they have the economic environment to continue investing in their business and growing it. Right now, it's with all these policies, and then with the lack of an effective relief bill from Congress, you're not getting that. My opponent has continued to turn down a lot of bipartisan. I mean, Dean Phillips just last week was talking. I mean, even yesterday, said that they came together, 25 Republicans, 25 Democrats, and created a bipartisan relief bill that Nancy Pelosi and Angie Craig both turned down, and then created this gigantic wish list to make a political statement rather than actually looking to help the American people and help those in this district the most, like the farmers and the small businesses and then the workers.
Speaking of partisanship in Washington, the most common conversation that I have with people is just how polarized we are. Obviously, there's a sense of that in your race. Can you talk about either how to, you know, get through the polarization, or, you know, how you would represent the district in a way that, you know, would cut down on the polarization maybe that voters and citizens are frustrated with?
Oh, absolutely. As a Marine veteran, it was always service before self and always country before anything else. And you know, it's the same mentality I'm taking to Congress. It's one of those, I came together with people from different backgrounds, viewpoints, cultures, and we all came together towards one common mission, one common purpose. And just as Dean Phillips is in, the Problem Solvers Caucus. It's 25 Republicans, 25 Democrats that meet every single week and address the hard issues. That's how we get rid of this partisan divide. You come together, you remove all emotion from the conversation, and you ensure that you sit there and hear the other side and figure out how to best create a plan, best create legislation that is going to benefit all of America. And that's what you need to do. You just have to bring civility to the conversation. That's exactly what I want to do. I'm an independent thinker who's going to represent the constituents of this district and, you know, put them first and foremost before anything else. It's that servant leadership that I carried throughout my entire 9 years in the Marine Corps. that I'm going to bring to Congress and make sure that we work with all people to ensure that it is the people's voice being heard and that their issues, their priorities are the ones being addressed in Congress.
One of the big issues that is key in your district, we've talked a little bit related to trade, is agriculture, is farmers. As you've met with farmers, what are their needs? What are their opinions on the things that would be most helpful if you go to Congress? Because Minnesota has a strong presence on the Agriculture Committee in the House, including Representative Craig. But the last few years have been frustrating between weather and prices and markets. Is there anything to accelerate kind of the recovery for farmers that you've put your finger on?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that we can be doing for our farmers right now is, I mean, first and foremost, opening up the markets and making sure that they have full and fair access to markets that they can get their products into. Second one is ensuring that they have the infrastructure to support what they need to do so that they can continue to get their products where they need to go. And then also, I mean, one thing that we can continue to be doing with our farmers is what they want is not more subsidies to get them an unfair advantage. What they want is a level playing field. And that's exactly what I'm going to fight for from our farmers. I do want to get in the Ag Committee so that I can always be a strong advocate for this district and make sure that the farmers have a voice in Congress from me and someone who's always fighting for them. But when you go across there, they just want a level playing field and they don't want regulation. They're overregulated at the state and then the federal government. One thing that they're afraid of is that my opponent's going to help support the Green New Deal, which is going to, I mean, hurt and hinder the farmers even more, to include a waterway to the United States, which is going to overregulate the farms. And I mean, to say what is a protected waterway could actually limit the amount of land they can farm effectively. I mean, farmers know the land best. So let's ensure that they do what they need to make sure that we have the products we do to help kind of feed this country.
You talk about the environment and farmers. Are there key issues on the environment, whether it's not the new Green Deal, that you think the U.S. needs to invest in, where you've seen kind of a balance in the environment or, you know, new energy that you would support? Because obviously the district also, you know, has a large presence of jobs related to, you know, refined fuels. And so how do you look at that issue for the environment as you, you know, talk to people in the district or as you bring in your military experience?
I mean, when you talk about energy, what Americans love is that we're energy independent for the first time in how many years as a country. But then when you get into energy specifically, I'm here to ensure that the consumer gets the best price for what energy that is going to benefit them. It's not forcing one down on them and skyrocketing prices. But then, you know, you look at my opponent, she continues to talk about these new energy initiatives, which is just the Green New Deal on steroids and getting rid of a lot of these old energy sources and bringing new ones in. I mean, you're talking about losing the thousands of jobs in this district. What I'm looking at is how can we best address the energy crisis here and climate change. You know, I believe in the science. Climate is changing, but I'm not here to sacrifice the economy in order to make sure that we're following the Green New Deal. When you look at things that you can be doing, I mean, look at the type of climate pollution you get from China, India, and Brazil. I mean, that's more despairing than what we're doing here. We have some of the highest standards in terms of ensuring we have clean climate regulations. But we're just hurting ourselves with the more and more regulations that we're putting on, whether it's at the state level or the federal level.
One of the top topics that obviously came into light this summer is criminal justice reform and race relations here in the country. How have you reflected on this? What kind of view do you bring? Where do you think Minnesota and the Congress needs to work on either criminal justice reform or policing and things like that?
So, I mean, when people are talking about race relations, we can always work to do better to ensure we're reaching to people of any race. But at the same time, I mean, in my experience in the military, I worked with people from all different backgrounds, cultures, and viewpoints, and race was never an issue. You just have to work together with people. Where you're talking about this defund the police movement to help enforce law, I mean, it's just insane because you're saying getting rid of those who are keeping our communities safe. I mean, just a week and a half ago, my opponent literally voted to strip $600 million away from law enforcement to effectively keep them out there on the streets and performing at the high level that they do to keep our community safe, keep people in law and order. What we need to do is continue to help fund our police and make sure they have the resources and training to be effective. I mean, in the military, we had a lot of resources to make sure every time we went overseas to be on the front lines that we were making the best decisions possible because we had the best training. The police need the same thing. So I don't see this as a criminal justice reform. This is something, if you want to fix race relations, you can't do that with legislation. You can't make a law to tell people how to think. You have to do this through social institutions like the schools and religious institutions.
A topic that gets a lot of attention every election year is Social Security and Medicare, making sure it's secure, making sure that seniors have the resources they need. There's been some concern about, you know, the COVID economy shortening the length of the Social Security Trust Fund, that we may need to shore it up sooner rather than later. Have you given any thought to what you would support in Congress related to Social Security?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something that my opponent continues to attack me on. And it's just, I mean, every year you hear Democrats use the same fear tactic and lies that Republicans are going to get rid of Social Security and Medicare. And it's just untrue. I am here to protect Social Security and Medicare, and I will reach bipartisan consensus in order to help strengthen and protect Social Security and Medicare so that those who have paid into the system can continue to receive the benefits from it, and then just continue to work so that we're protecting our senior citizens.
And then when you look at protecting that, are there things you would support that would make it more secure? Are there things that are off the table for you? From a detailed standpoint, are there proposals that you've seen that you support with the future of Social Security or Medicare?
I haven't seen anything yet that is concrete enough to where I would support it. It's one of those that, you know, I'd like to talk to the constituents. I'd like to talk to the experts to find out what's the best way forward. But no, I have not seen anything that I would support at this time to say, you know, from either side that they, you know, Republicans are continuing to propose great ideas of how to protect Social Security and Medicare. But from what I'm seeing from both parties, there's nothing solid enough to say that that is something I can give 100% behind.
You've brought up the Problem Solvers Caucus a couple times. Is that something that you'd look to join if you went to Congress?
Yes, I would like to join the Problem Solvers Caucus. I mean, I'm sitting here saying I want to work with both parties. That's the best way to show it is through action. Whereas my opponent joined the most radical left caucus, the Progressive Caucus, which Ilhan Omar is the second in command behind. I want to make sure that I'm working with both parties so that we can continue to have that civil conversation to find out the best solutions to address the problems that this country is facing. And it's never just through one party's viewpoint. You have to work with everybody, and you have to bring in the experts in every field that you're discussing with legislation.
Have you, as you went into this race for Congress, what kind of prompted you to put your name on the ballot? And have you talked to anybody else across the country, either Republican or Democrat, that, you know, feels as though there's going to be a different approach? Because I do think, you know, so much of what we see and hear is about partisanship and polarization, that any candidate, I think, that is running right now is, you know, either on Team Red or Team Blue. And very few candidates are running in a way that promotes bipartisanship. What, give your philosophy before you even signed up to be a candidate.
No, this was one that, I mean, I did not run into this race, you know, just thinking, you know, it was one of those, me and my wife took a lot of prayer and deliberation behind before we stepped in. And it was because I want to make sure my heart was in the right spot. And, you know, all years of my service, when I was leading men and women in this country through like the most toughest chaotic situations, it was always the approach I took to those issues. And it was that servant leadership to make sure I was a resource to the men and women I was leading. It was that type of approach and that type of mindset that brought me to Congress, because I want to be that for this country. I want to be that for the constituents of this district. I want to be that servant leader who puts their interest first and foremost. And I want to be a service before self type individual. because it's always about this country and the constituents. I'm here to represent, and talking with people from both sides, Republican and Democrat. It's the same approach that you hear. I mean, even Dean Phillips says he wants to make sure that he's talking to everyone. And it's that same approach we have to take to get rid of that divisiveness. And that's why I want to run, is because the lack of leadership, character, and integrity you're getting from elected officials. I want to bring my experience having served in the nation's elite Marine Special Operations and bring that to Congress so that make sure that we have someone who is looking for the interest of the people and doing everything I can to put their priorities, their issues first and foremost, so that they have a voice at the table.
You're listening to WCCO News Talk 830. I'm Blaise Olson. This is a Fluence Forum. We're focused on the 2nd Congressional District. Our guest has been Tyler Kistner. Tyler, as we wrap up here, there's not much time left in the election. If you've learned one thing through this experience, what is it that will carry on, win or lose in this election?
Oh, I mean, it's every day you gain a new experience, and it's how you continue to set yourself up for a better future. And that's the type of experience. It's maintaining that servant type leadership that I've carried through with the Marine Corps into this campaign, and just getting out there, talking to the people and hearing from them point blank, whether it's over in Shakopee or down in the southern part of the district in Goodhue County or Northfield. I mean, you're here to represent the people, so you always have to have that conversation. And I love talking to people because I love to know how I can best advocate and fight for them. That's the experience that I'm going to continue to maintain and bring to Congress, because you can't stop that conversation. You have to know how to represent the district. And the only way you do so is making sure you're always getting out there day in and day out and talking to those you're representing.
Tyler Kistner, thank you for joining us on this Fluence Forum, and we'll stay tuned here through the end of the election.
Well, thank you so much, Blaise. It's a pleasure having me on this, and looking forward to the next conversation we have. God bless.
Sounds great. You've been listening to Fluence Forum. This is the 2nd Congressional District race. The first half hour was with Representative Angie Craig. The second half hour with her challenger, Republican Tyler Kistner. If you just tuned in, you can catch the whole thing by tuning in to WCCORadio.com. and searching Fluence Forum. I'm Blaise Olson. Thanks for listening.
The preceding program is paid for by AARP of Minnesota, Corn Growers of Minnesota, and by Minnesota's credit unions. News Talk 830 WCCO KMNB HD2, Minneapolis, St. Paul.